Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
He's back.
I'm back!
All right, here we go. Get ready to have a good time.
Well, come on, what are we waiting for? Let's go!
This is exciting, isn't it?
No.
Yes.
All right, we're on.
Hello, testing.
Welcome aboard the Dreamliner.
Hello.
These are the names of the pilots.
Okay.
Some Ting Wong.
Okay.
Wee Too Low.
Okay.
And Ho Lee.
Whoa. What the hell happened?
This was a nice evening.
Don't.
But wait, there's more.
Four, three, two.
Gary.
Welcome back.
He's down on the phone.
I am proud of you, my man.
Gary. What's going on, my friend?
Dave. I heard you talking to Jeffrey Bear. I don't think you could put a show on today on broadcast television called BJ and the Dirty Dragon.
You're probably right about that.
No, it would not get on today.
No, you couldn't do that.
We're too politically correct.
Yes, we are way too politically correct. We absolutely are. You know, I was also saying, you know, I feel bad. Like, sometimes when you and I are talking on the phone, you like my afternoon drive home. You're my drive to work. I feel like those calls should be sponsored because it's always very entertaining.
Okay, if you get a sponsor, I'll do it for you.
You're on board. You know, it is, I was thinking of you this week because it's Record Store Day, and I remember one of our conversations we had off air was, you know, how you got your start in radio. You were doing like FYR, YEN, but then you were doing overnights at the greatest Chicago FM rock station ever, and that was The Loop, playing the songs we know today as classic rock.
Yeah, I said to you, I was on The Loop playing classic rock, and you said, no, you were playing rock. It was classic years later,
yeah, right.
But at that time, it wasn't classic rock. It's like in Mexico, Mexican food is just called food.
That's true.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Yeah, I played music in the first 5 or 6 years of my career and started at WFYR, and it was a format that played late 50s to mid-60s music.
That's right.
And yeah, it was kind of American Graffiti-like, that kind of soundtrack, if you remember that movie.
Do you? Yeah, we just watched it the other day, actually. It's like the ideal summer movie.
I'll tell you that. A movie was the inspiration, one of the main inspirations for me to get into radio. When I saw Wolfman Jack in the movie, I was just blown away. Mm-hmm. I want to do that, and I started to pursue it from that point on. And then I met Wolfman Jack years later, and he was the nicest guy, and it just all came full circle for me as far as sometimes you have these idols and you meet them, and it's not what you thought it would be, and it ruins it, but he was the whole thing. I love that guy.
And when you think about American Graffiti, so that was early 70s, 73, maybe 72,
yes,
whatever it was.
73, yeah.
It was not that... You know, and I think this was a story about the early 60s, like, you know, the end of that rock and roll era a little bit. That was only like 10 years later that we were reminiscing about that. And, you know, when you talk about Wolfman Jack, I didn't know the background on this guy really until I did some research. He was doing a show like nationally, like through Canada or through Mexico? Mexico, right? Yeah.
Right. I think it was a 500,000-watt signal or something like that coming across the border.
Killing
animals.
It was
legendary for those of us who got into radio. Heard about all these legends out there. He was the top of the list for me.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so we were talking about the songs, you know, so 77 I think is when you started at The Loop, and you know, here's the top 10. I wanted to throw this at you. This is the top 10 songs of that time, just to tell you, this was some of these are the greatest anthems of rock, and you were playing these at first year. So number 10 was Black Betty, Ram Jam. We Will Rock You by Queen, Sweet Talkin' Woman by ELO, Dreams Fleetwood Mac, Deacon Blues, Steely Dan, Hotel California, which most lists say that this is like one of the top classic rock anthems of all time, Running on Empty, Jackson Brown, What's Your Name, which was Skynyrd, Like a Hurricane, Neil Young, and Go Your Own Way, which has got its own story itself by Fleetwood Mac. Those were the classics.
Yeah. Yeah, that's your 70s list there for 77. That was 77, you said?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah, and the 70s at some point, probably towards the early 80s, were being dismissed as rather shallow and not happening. But now that we have some distance, I'll tell you what, I love the 70s. I loved everything about the 70s. When you listen to the music, it really has depth and a lot going on. And it did get a bad rap, I think, because towards the end of the decade, obviously, the disco situation entered into it, and that got kind of crazy, as we know. But overall, the decade was solid as far as music. Now, can we talk about just the production of a 12-inch album and holding that in your hand?
Yeah.
That is the part that I was totally in love with in the 60s and 70s, having that 12 inches of vinyl to put on the turntable, and then you look at the album cover over and over again, the front and the back, and there's something to it. It became part of your decor because you would leave
Absolutely.
Them on display wherever you lived. They were in crates or whatever, but they were there where you could look at them all the time.
So I know you have a story about your daughter with this, but we bought my daughter Emma a record player a couple years ago, and she's got classics that she buys. So she used to say to me, like, what are you doing? Like, we were going to go out on a Friday night for dinner. She goes, well, when you were my age, like, where'd you go? And I'm like, we went to a record store. And she's like, well, let's go to a record store. And so she probably bought about a half dozen albums, like classics. She bought some Michael Jackson as well. But then she bought Billie Eilish. She bought Taylor Swift on vinyl. And now as she's redoing her room at 15, 16 years old, the entire center of her room are album covers from the classic rock era because it's artwork. I mean, it's beautiful artwork.
I got to tell you a quick story. A friend of mine from high school, Mike Berta, I'll never forget his name, hung out with him and went to his house one day. He had put album covers as one solid wall of his bedroom, and it looked so cool.
I bet it did.
The way he did that.
Yeah. But you said Britta was going through some of your records at home.
Britta was going through, first of all, when Britta got a turntable about a year ago, I said, oh, great, I'll grab my 45s and we'll play them. And she said, what's a 45? That made me feel good. That happens. It's generational. It's going to happen. And then she went into my album collection and pulled about a dozen albums, and she pulled Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Police, Fleetwood Mac, Rumors.
Sure.
The Police, Regatta de Blanc, Some Girls by the Stones, and Fleetwood Mac, I mentioned, a lot of Stones albums she pulled out of my collection, The Who, The Kids Are All Right, Jackson Brown, The Pretender. And it's really great to watch somebody in her generation, Cheap Trick. Oh, I was so glad she pulled that one, One-on-One, the album One-on-One, Joe Cocker. It's really great to watch people see this stuff and hear this stuff for the first time.
But did she pull it because of the artwork, Gary? Did she pull it because of the music, or a little combination of both?
Like, I think it's a combination, because when I look at these album covers, Dave, it's just so much fun again to look at these album covers and see the artwork and what they were putting together as far as how they were marketing themselves. And to that point, I'm in the car yesterday listening to Sirius XM, the Beatles channel, and they played a song off Beatles 6, which was the American version of that album. And when I saw the album cover on the screen, I knew exactly the moment I bought the album at Gately's People Store in Roseland. My mother dropped me off. I got the album, and she went and did some errands. And I sat outside the store and just looked at the album until she picked me up for about a half hour. And I remember that moment as if it were a week ago.
Yeah. I bought my first album. I think it was an REO Speedwagon album. It was You Can't Tune a Piano, But You Can't Tune a Fish. From Marshall Fields on State Street, because I had a huge record department down there, and I can't even remember why we were in there, but I was like, oh no, I got to stop here and check this stuff out.
Yeah, I think that's the good part about the revitalization of albums. They were on life support, but now it's on the uptick, and I'm so happy to see that they're not going to go away entirely. And that was what was presented to us when the CD came in. These record companies said, oh, the CD is going to be cheaper than the albums were, and the audio is going to be better.
I don't think so. No, I don't think so at all. We bought a Zenith. I know I'm going to sound like a really old guy here, but we bought a Zenith console, one of those 1960s that with the lever doors, you know, that would open up to listen to. And I got the record player fixed. And when my son's friends come over, when Emma's friends come over, they jam that thing. We put it right in the center of the stairwell, so it goes through the whole house. There is nothing. There's no Apple device that carries the bass and that sound like it is throughout the entire house.
No, you wanted it to be furniture back then. It was furniture.
Yeah,
it wasn't just some little thing in the corner. It's furniture. And because you're immersed in Frank Sinatra, that whole ring-a-ding-ding, the hi-fi of the 50s and 60s, and people walking around with cocktails, I love that.
Speaking of Sinatra, I said this off air, but I'm working on Willie Nelson co-hosting a Sinatra Hours with me. And because he just put out an album that's a tribute to Frank, so it's all his covers. And they reached out to us and said, you know, he's interested in talking to you about this. I'm like, well, how about he just co-host a show? So we're working on that. So hopefully we can.
Wow, that'll be great.
We can get that done. But best-selling albums in history, Eagles is the greatest hits, is the 38 million copies of that is number one. Then it was Michael Jackson, Thriller. Just talking about vinyl albums, the Eagles, Hotel California. So they're twice on here. The Beatles. I don't have the right album here, but it's the Beatles. Billy Joel, Greatest Hits, Volume 1 and 2. Led Zeppelin 4. Pink Floyd, The Wall, which is an absolutely classic cover in and of itself. AC/DC, Back in Black. And then there's a Garth Brooks and a Hootie and the Blowfish. But those are probably as classic rock and roll as you can get.
I went to see The Wall performed in New York in 1980. And sitting there, and there's a small plane that comes from the back of their arena and crashes into the wall. And I'm sitting there going, oh my, this whole thing. And Roger Waters went out again. I understand that. But this was back in the release area of the album, 1980, and they toured with that, and it was just mind-blowing.
Think about how many years we had a vinyl record, how we had albums, right? And Taylor Swift last week. Evermore, actually earlier this week, the first album ever to sell 100,000 vinyl copies in 1 week in U.S. history, never done before, where they sold 100,000 albums, and she just did it decades after vinyl, you know, has gone away.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, because our kids, my daughter's 24, this is something they're discovering and think it's cool. That's great.
Yeah. Absolutely. No question. Talking to Radio Hall of Famer Gary Myers. Weekday podcasts are available at GaryMeyer.com, and there's more with him next on 720 WGN. All right, it's Dave Plyer on 720 WGN. We're talking to Gary Meyer. You know, we were talking about vinyl sales are up, and so are the prices. It's like $30 for an album now. Steel's up, lumber, and that's $28. Yeah, for Swift's album. I remember when they were like $8.
Yeah.
But, you know, vinyl sales are up. Steel, lumber, plastic, fuel, corn, soybean, sugar, sunflower, houses, diapers, cars, toilet paper, everything's rising, right? We just opened.
I thought the real scary moment in the last month or so was when there was a shortage of dipping sauces at Chick-fil-A.
Just garbage, which is baloney. I know, right? But
that scared me.
That, and you know, today, okay, so Chicago, Illinois opened up 100%. And by the way, Steve Bertrand said to say hello. And
hello, Steve.
He was talking earlier about words he never wanted to hear again that were very pandemic related. But as we look back at this time in history, because you and I talked a lot during all the shutdowns and everything, you know, where you know, we couldn't do anything. We could go, well, how are we going to look at this moment in time? Because now it almost feels like, well, we're out. Everything's back to normal. How are we going to look at this time 5 years down the road?
I've done this discussion on my podcast, and I overlaid it on 9/11 and post 9/11. Mm-hmm. And I remember, Dave, and tell me your thoughts. It seemed like it was about, well, on 9/12, everybody's walking around, well, no more nonsense, no more stupidity. We're going to really tighten it up, and this is a real awakening for us. Nothing's going to be crazy anymore. We're going to do it right. That lasted all of about 3 weeks, I remember.
Yeah.
And by 6 weeks after 9/11, it was like 9/11 never happened. I'm beginning to feel that in about 3 to 6 months, this pandemic is going to go into the ether.
It's going to be a blip.
Yeah, and I think people want to forget it, and they will. We're 20 years past 9/11. There's a whole generation that doesn't even know 9/11.
Yeah, no, just by what we told them. Absolutely. And, you know, I think the same thing, that, you know, I almost feel like it's going to be a little bit more of a scarring, because 9/11, you know, it was obviously just horrible. And we as a country kind of brought ourselves together to get through it. But we all dealt with this on some level. There's a, most of us knew somebody that, that died of COVID. So it's like we, it's all touched us in a different way. I almost think like there's going to be a little PTSD coming out of this.
I totally agree. Yeah. I was thinking that yesterday, going through the opening up everywhere in the country. And then I had this moment of, I'll bet there's going to be a wave in a couple months, whatever, and it's going to wash over a lot of people where, what the heck was that?
What
and
happened?
I haven't fully cataloged it and dealt with it or whatever. And there are permanent changes. You're right. With 9/11, nothing shut down for any length of time. The airlines for a few days.
Couple days
but everything else stayed open. It didn't maybe get the business in the first few weeks, but nothing shut down to this extent.
Right.
So this has a whole different attitude about it, and we'll have to see how we emerge entirely.
Absolutely.
It's weird. I heard you talking about walking around without a mask. I feel naked.
A little bit. It's different now, right? Yeah, it's absolutely different.
Yeah, it's
different.
Weird.
It's Friday night. Is there an old-fashioned in your future?
Well, during my, I do my show live on Fridays.
Happy hour.
And it's a cocktail show, and I have a Manhattan.
Ooh.
And I had my Manhattan, and I'm still kind of flying on that a little bit, but I might have to top it off after this conversation. Hey, I wanted to ask you, Dave, I heard a Supper Club commercial in that last break. Did you bring that business?
No, I didn't, but you know how I feel about Supper Clubs. That's all.
I know.
That's my summers are all about. Check out Gary's weekday podcast every single day, Monday through Friday at GaryMeyer.com. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, Dave.
My pleasure, sir.